Back in the spring, tucked into the state budget, was language empowering Governor Andrew Cuomo to close prisons with just 90 days of notice to the state legislature. In late December, the governor acted on those powers, announcing plans to close three of the state's 52 correctional facilities. According to his administration, the move is projected to save $89 million annually and is made possible by the state's declining prison population. To discuss the move, we spoke before New Year's with Michael Powers, president of the union representing state's correctional officers, which opposes the closures. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you.
So walk me through why, from your perspective, it's a mistake to close the Gowanda and Watertown correctional facilities and the annex at the Clinton correctional facility.
So a short year ago, he had closed two other facilities, and through the legislature and through the public protection hearings, we had met with members of the governor's staff, along with leaders of the legislature, and asked poignantly to study and work with us to break down the reason for the high rises of violence in our correctional facilities and the high amounts of contraband that's coming into the correctional facilities. A short 3 years ago, the governor implemented a program in the correctional system called the Secure Vendor Package Program, which allowed for packages to come in from a private vendor instead of coming in off the streets from a grocery store, where the possibility of contraband coming in through packages from the street are much greater than they would be coming from a private vendor, from us one vendor who takes the order, places the order, and then sends it in. We called it the Secure Vendor Package Program. That would have limited a lot of the violence. And we asked for a study from both the legislature and the executive branch of government to review the high rises of violence in our facilities before you go and shutter any other correctional facilities. And you know, unbeknownst to us, would a year later, we'd be in the middle of a worldwide pandemic that calls for greater social distancing. And then as this budget came to light this year, where he called for 2,500 to 2,750 beds, which equated to three facilities, we once again got overlooked. And more importantly, to add to the violence, and you had mentioned earlier in your intro, the reducing amount of inmates in the system, yet the violence in our correctional facility continues to rise each and every year since 2014, significantly, I might add.
And so are you attributing the increase in violence to the shrinking number of correctional facilities?
Absolutely. We don't have, when you start taking away the resources that allow us to do our jobs in a secure environment, we can't have eyes and ears everywhere. And we're asking during the pandemic for proper social distancing. Meaning that instead of having inmates double bunked and then the double bunks eventually came down, but to have them neighboring each other in close quarters in dormitory type settings is not the national standard the standard for New York, which the governor imposes on the public. Why not do it in the correctional facilities? We were successful in the spring by limiting transportation and visits in our facilities at our call to the governor and the legislature to shut down visits and transportation, which slowed the roll of COVID into the correctional facilities back in the spring. Well, as the summer came and went, they opened all this back up and they didn't, the governor sits on his standards of whatever the case may be, whatever he's pandering to now, as far as his platform, if you will. But it obviously isn't working because now we've got an influx of COVID in our correctional facilities. But the decreasing amount of inmate population and the high rise of violence, we have a much more violent offender in the system, a heavy gang present in the system that controls the contraband, creates the violence, and puts not only the inmate population in harm's way, but the staff, the civilian and security staff as well, in our correctional facility. So it's been we're back and forth. They assure us that we'll do this study. It actually came out in contract language in our contract that we do this study. They set aside $5 million in our contract. Haven't seen a thing since. you know, other than the 2% raise that they took away from us back in April, which is understandable. But, you know, in the same breath, you know, we've asked for these studies and we're not getting anywhere. And now we're seeing a much more violent offender in a system that's, quite frankly, seeing a rise in COVID numbers in there that's creating an unsafe work environment.
So when the Cuomo administration says that they have the space in the prison system to accommodate inmates at these facilities and other locations, do you feel like they're not accurately representing what's happening in the prisons around New York?
Well, with the high rise of violence in our system, if instead of one officer overseeing 60 to 70 inmates in a housing unit, and if we were to do social, a little more social distancing and spread the inmates out a little bit more, that ratio would be different between daylight hours and late evening hours. And I'm not including the midnights, but through the day shifts and afternoon shifts, we'd be supervising less inmates and being able to see more and to prevent any antisocial distancing that's occurring within the correctional setting. It makes for a much more safer environment for all.
We're talking about the decision to close three upstate prison facilities, and our guest is Michael Powers, president of the union representing corrections officers in New York. The Cuomo administration makes a point of saying that the prison population is down at levels lower than it's been in 30 years. I think it's about 1985 is the last time it was this low. How does our number of facilities compare to what we had, say, 30 years ago?
Well, 30 years, not too long ago. I mean, the whole state was double bunked. You had every facility in the state had two inmates in a cubicle, and that's come down significantly since. Governor Cuomo's father built prisons throughout the state of New York, throughout all aspects of the state, to house much of what's transpired, and through legislative activity, the amendment of the Rockefeller drug laws has taken more of the nonviolent inmate out of the system, which has decreased the system down to this violent atmosphere that we have, this much more violent setting that we live in. It's still the infrastructure is still there. It still equates to one in a cubicle instead of two. So yeah, it has significantly decreased through criminal justice reform, which, how well is that working when all your major municipalities throughout the state of New York, your larger metropolitan areas throughout the state of New York are seeing close to 100% crime and rise in violent crime? Eventually it's, you're going to see that trend come back to, having to remove people from society because of their egregious acts.
I'm interested in the comment you made about sort of the composition of the inmates themselves. They've moved away from locking up some of the nonviolent offenders, and how that it contributes to a prison population that is made up of a larger percentage of violent offenders. And thinking about that, does that mean we need to rethink how we approach our prisons? I mean, need to be a whole reimagining of what needs to be done in prisons to keep inmates as well as the guards safe?
There's plenty of programs out there for many to take advantage of. That struggle is real over the fact that there's just so much violence in there now that it's difficult to maintain a setting. Now, when you're in a correctional setting and you've got a major incident which occurs, I would bet my paycheck right now that there's one jumping off right now somewhere in one of our 51 facilities. With that being said, that stops all movement and traction and rehabilitative process. So you have some violent offenders in there that are egregious actors that are just maintaining a trade, if you will, or a drug trade or a control trade within a facility, and a violent act comes out, and the ones that want to get the rehabilitation and the programming, everything stops, and that comes with a large amount of the violence that's being portrayed and the high volumes of contraband that come in that create the violence and the control in these settings. It's no different than the street corners in some areas of the state and larger metropolitan areas where the drug trade on the street is real. And, you know, it's very much the same. I equate a correctional facility to be very much like a society. If you have an egregious actor on the street, the people, through the laws, remove the violent offender or the egregious actor for the acts out of society. Well, we have that same premise inside our jails, which has significantly been softened as of late. And it's difficult for us to maintain control when it's basically free-for-all.
The administration says they don't anticipate any layoffs due to these closures. What's your understanding of where the affected employees might potentially land in 2021 when these facilities are closed?
Well, we hope that some of the facilities in the surrounding areas can absorb a majority of these members due to the fact that it has a huge impact, not only economically in an area for small businesses, such as, I'll use Gowanda, for example. Gowanda's a small village in western New York. You know, it's close to the Indian Reservation, where a lot of local businesses rely, small businesses rely on correction officers in their day-to-day travel. And, you know, so it has a huge impact there from an economic standpoint. But more importantly, we want to be able to make sure that we can find a facility within close proximity to the one that they're working in before it shutters to allow them not to have to uproot their family. That's the objective. And we work with the department very closely on that in these endeavors. We did it last year. There's been facility closures in the past. Governor's quick to point out how many facilities he's closed over the years. And with that being said, we've always had a good success rate in being able to relocate employees. Unfortunately, some do get affected and have to travel great distances. But, you know, in a tough time right now, you know, we're grateful that that many still have a job. And we're grateful that there'll be no layoffs. And we'll work closely with the department to find homes for all of these guys and gals.
In less than a month, the governor is due to produce his budget proposal. Are you anticipating a similar authorization for him to request in the state budget again to potentially close more prisons?
I couldn't say. You know, I honestly don't. I can't see how he can continue to do this, especially during this pandemic, you know, going forward. Time will tell, but I hope not. I don't foresee it. I don't see how he can, and without jeopardizing the safety of the facility and the people that work and reside and work in these facilities. So God willing, that's not the case.
We've been speaking with New York State Correctional Officers and Police Benevolence Association President Michael Powers. Michael, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.